She's there to work with them.
Irony free, of course. Your colleague, Jessica Dos Santos, has a great article up there at Venezuela Analysis. Two vultures circling the rubble, U.S. troops and businesses descend on Venezuela. Ricardo's most recent article at Venezuela Analysis is Venezuelan business spokesman says privatizations will boost efficiency, reduce government payroll. Thanks a lot, Ricardo, for coming on again today. And I'll put the link to Reason to Resist piece with Vijay Prashad and Dimitri Lascaris in the show notes as well. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Sounds good. And thanks again for the invitation. And I look forward to the next one.
I'm going to be back and we're going to talk about Colombia with Dan Kovalik.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla radio is everywhere. Everywhere. All the time.
Was elected, his voters were ecstatic. When agents poured into the cities, it was cinematic. Closing down the borders, they said, just you wait. Getting rid of the immigrants will make the country great. In spite of the tariffs and all those deported, the economy was tanking instead of being sorted. Then came the visit from a close ally who came to DC with a plan for the president to try. When the whole plot went from bad to worst, written by Israel first. Are wondering that despite the fact that they'll all be called anti-Semites, how it is such a small place can have the impact it's got, how it seems to have the power to call the shots in the USA. A movement grew, make America great again. Only a few people understood who controlled the operation, how the Epstein class ran the nation. When the whole plot went from bad to worst, written by Israel first.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, there's perhaps no more apt analog for Colombia's current political situation than Monday's deadly earthquake. The new president has as much as promised to tear down all leftist Gustavo Petro's government has built over the last 4 years. Abelardo de la Espriella promises, too, he will reinstitute war on drugs measures, including the glyphosate fumigado in the countryside. But do his American sponsors really want to recreate the condition of Colombia's civil war? Dan Kovalik is a lawyer, educator, labor peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. Dan represented unions whose membership were targeted by Colombia's death squads during the generational conflict there. He currently acts as Gustavo Petro's legal representative in the United States. Dan's book titles include No More War, How the West Violates International Law by Using Humanitarian Intervention to Advance Economic and Strategic Interest, The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care, The Plot to Overthrow Venezuela, and his latest, co-authored with Jeremy Kuzmar, of Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. Welcome back to the program, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always my pleasure, Dan. What are you hearing, firstly, from your friends and colleagues in Colombia about Monday's earthquake there and its aftermath?
Yeah, well, it was a terrible earthquake. I think something like 7.5 on the Richter scale did a lot of damage. I think they still don't know what the body count is, but certainly it's going to be in the hundreds at least. And the new government of Espriella, you know, they've already shown themselves to be either incompetent or just callous. You know, even I see, you know, aid groups are openly saying that he's not even letting them know how to get aid in. And so it's not a good situation.
It's incredible. I'm looking at your Twitter feed and you've reposted something from Zhu Zhengyang. Forgive me, Mr. Zhu, for the pronunciation. He happens to be with the Chinese government, and he's writing this as of yesterday morning, at least, saying, quote, "We hope that the Colombian government will immediately disclose the name of the official and their official contact to coordinate international assistance for the victims of the earthquake. Please help us spread this message. It's urgent." This is the Chinese government begging the Colombians to tell them, how can they help? Who do they talk to? And apparently, as of yesterday morning, at least, they were getting no response. Do you know, Dan, if that has improved since?
I think it's still a big problem. You know, I think this guy, this new president, just again, he doesn't, you know, what he was doing before, he was a lawyer for the cartels. So he doesn't have experience. And so I do worry that this is going to be a big problem going forward in terms of the emergency capacity of the new government.
Well, it's only his first few days in office. He's getting a huge amount of criticism for this, and rightly so. I would venture, though, Dan, given the circumstance that, you know, an emergency of this magnitude is not difficult to ignore. And you would think the first thing you do is get people around you with experience to start, you know, doing the kinds of things that the Chinese government is falling over themselves to receive. It doesn't seem to me that it would take any kinds of advanced degrees in political science or anything else to know which way to step in this circumstance. But this guy, I don't know. There's just videos of him partying and celebrating his ascension.
I think he's a very narcissistic human being, and I think that's informing how he's approaching this emergency. And I frankly, sadly, the result is that people are suffering and not getting the help they need.
Well, it's incredible and reminds of George W. Bush after the Katrina disaster in Louisiana in the South there, with just a complete abandonment and incompetence that beggared belief.
Well, yeah. And in the situation there, I mean, if you want to talk about Katrina, what people may not forget is I remember when Katrina was approaching New Orleans and they said, they were worried it was going to be a Category 5 storm, which they knew that would breach the levees. It only ended up being a Category 3 storm when it hit New Orleans, and it should have been able to withstand it, but the levees broke because they hadn't been fixed. You know, so that ended up being a real man-made crisis, and then, as you say, the federal government was very slow to act to help people, and many people died unnecessarily, and there were some allegations I thought were quite apt that, you know, some of it was due to racism. You know, it was the poorer parts in New Orleans that were lost, and lost forever, by the way. They've lost permanently one-third of their population in New Orleans. So, but in any case, yes, I think we're seeing a very similar dynamic in Colombia.
Well, George Bush don't like black people. I remember 21 years ago, almost to the day, the anniversary being just a couple of weeks away from now, and the response afterwards, the militarized response with these Blackwater mercenaries in the streets of New Orleans, people being shot for looting, you know, when there was nothing coming in for support. I don't know that it's going to be the same in Colombia. If there's going to be no coordinated effort other than some kind of militarized versions, I'm reading that there's violence and there have been shootings and so forth going on. I don't know if this is related to the earthquake or related to the contested ascension of Espriella. Do you know more about who's shooting at who, Dan?
Well, I think it's mostly the new government forces that are going after people, as Espria had promised. I mean, he threatened that he was going to go after left-wing figures and against the social movements, and they're already starting to do that.
And what about your client, Gustavo Petro? I'm not going to ask you where he is, but is he safe? Do you know?
I hope he's safe. I mean, he's safe for the moment, yeah. I mean, I know he's... Yeah, he is safe. He's okay for the moment. But I think he certainly has fears about his future safety and whether it will be safe to stay in Colombia. I think that is a big issue because, again, Espria promised to go after Petro personally. So
I was a little surprised he came back from Cuba, actually.
Well, I think Cuba would not have been his place of choice, but I think there are other countries he's thinking about maybe moving to, yes.
And what about his protege, Ivan Cepeda? He ran for the presidency. He has been very vocal saying that this was rigged, as has Petro, and Petro has got the receipts. He's been posting them up online for, even before the election, there was questions of what was going on with the rigging of this poll. Is Cepeda safe? I mean, he seems to be even saying that an armed resistance, I mean, if I'm reading between the lines correctly in translation, isn't out of the question.
Well, Petro said the same thing. I think they're both, I think their security is a big issue. And remember that Cepeda's father had been killed when he was a young man. So this is a very... And I fear that the bad old days are going to return, and there will be killings of that kind again, sadly.
Well, as I alluded in the introduction, the fumigado, you and I have been talking a long time about Colombia. I can't even remember how long, Dan, maybe 13, 14 years or something like that.
Yeah, I think maybe even more than that, yeah.
And way back when, we were talking of the work you did with the unions and protecting unions that were getting disappeared by the desk. Jesus Christ, it was such a terrible situation. I think perhaps the last few years of peace have dulled people's memories to it. But now the fumigado was one of these things in the countryside where they were spraying what we now recognize as glyphosate over crops in this sort of, you know, in the war on drugs, so-called. And Espriella says he's going to reinstitute this. It's going to be a hunt for communists and stuff, I guess, is the next shoe to drop.
Yeah, well, that is, again, I think he has signaled that, and I think that's a real possibility. And, of course, when they say communists, they mean trade union leaders, indigenous leaders, Catholic priests who advocate for the poor. You know, they have a very broad definition of what they think communists are.
I know this is a difficult thing to say, but is there a possibility of a reversal of this election, given the kinds of evidence that has been put forward by Petro and others? Are there investigations, or is this just a done deal and we're in it for the worst of what this Espriella clown can mete out?
I think realistically, they're going to be stuck with him for 4 years. I mean, I just sadly.
Well, even more sad, we look at what's going on in Venezuela, and I mentioned that you wrote a book on the plot to overthrow Venezuela. Could there be a worse situation than you're seeing across the border from Colombia in Venezuela now?
You mean, would Venezuela be worse than Colombia? I mean, I think Colombia is going to be worse because they have this history of violence, armed groups that still exist there. Many armed groups exist in Colombia that are going to carry out atrocities, unfortunately. And Venezuela doesn't have a real history of that. So I would say Colombia is going to have the worst of it.
Well, and Colombia has, I mean, I hate to admit, though, despite Cepeda's claims and Petro, there is a constituency, a very strong constituency. Petro's election was razor thin, that do support the right wing and do support the right wing philosophy, for lack of a more apt term.
Well, that's true. I mean, there, you know, that is the sad truth, that even if Espriella might have won through fraud, I mean, he only could have done that if the election were as close as it were. And the election was decided by a couple hundred thousand votes. So sadly, there is he has a strong percentage of people who support him and support his threatened policies, which are, you know, basically state repression.
Yeah. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Dan Kovalik. Dan's a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. We're speaking in and around the recent political movement in Colombia. Dan is well familiar with the country. He's been there many times to monitor elections in the past. You were there, Dan. We talked the last time about your experience monitoring the pre-election, not as an official monitor, but just to bear witness, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I've been going to Colombia since 1999. I've been all over the country, and yes, I've done a lot of work just paying witness to the crimes of the state, you know, that existed prior to Petro's inauguration in 2022, and that I fear, yes, are going to return now.
Well, I was speaking just before you and I got on with Ricardo Vosch, the Venezuelan journalist, and he passes on his greetings to you that he mentioned that you and he had spoken some time ago. And talking about your long history there with the union activism, defending the union, especially with Coca-Cola, but others as well. Dan, it seems like such a grotesque reversal in the whole region. A few years ago, we were talking about the pink tide and the movement left of Latin America. It seemed like as the United States was concerned in other parts of the world that there might actually be some daylight there where governments that seem to have the people's interests first were getting into power and changes were being made. None more dramatic, of course, than the Hugo Chavez's Venezuela. Now the tide is I don't know if it's going out or coming in like a tsunami, but it seems like a disaster for the people on the beach.
Yeah, well, yes. And although, you know, when you say tide, it suggests maybe a popular movement in that direction. I think, sadly, a lot of it's the result of U.S. meddling and interference in these countries. I mean, you can go down the list of countries where the U.S. in very recent years has, affected coup d'etats, you know, either through what they call lawfare, you know, these false prosecutions of progressive leaders like Lula da Silva, for example, in Brazil, who we know the Obama administration worked with Brazil to put him in jail at a very key time when he could have run for president. Against Bolsonaro, those charges ended up being dropped later and he was freed, but it allowed Bolsonaro to come to power. They did a similar thing in Argentina with Cristina Kirchner, who's now in jail. The president of Peru, progressive president, has been put in jail as well. You had the coup in Honduras in 2009, in which the president, again, through U.S. machinations, was kidnapped and flown out of the country. Of course, you had Nicolas Maduro kidnapped by the U.S., President Maduro kidnapped by the U.S. just this year from Venezuela. So a lot of what we see in terms of the pink tide, ebbing, wasn't by accident or by nature. It was through direct interference of the United States.
Well, Rafael Correa, too, in Ecuador. And in what happened in Honduras, the list just goes on and on. I saw what is purported to be a popular meme, a map of South America showing Brazil as this eastward bulwark, and then all in red, and then all the other countries of the entire Western South America with a little American flags, that all of these countries have now been taken over essentially by American interests.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you look at Bolivia as well, where Evo Morales was overthrown in a coup in 2019. And this ended up leading to his party, his political party, kind of falling apart. And so now the right wing's in power in Bolivia. Really, the only progressive governments left are Cuba, which is in dire straits because of the U.S. blockade, Nicaragua, Mexico, and there's some debate what the nature of the Venezuelan government is now, but that's pretty much it.
Well, Brazil, too, there's questions about Lula and his failure to support Venezuela when there was an opportunity to bring Venezuela into the BRICS coalition, and he kiboshed it.
No, that the Lula of today is not the progressive president that he had been during his first iteration, that is for sure, in a number of different ways.
Well, I hate to point fingers south of the border, south of the border, I guess I should say, up here in Canada. But south of the border, for me at least, is the United States. And what's going on in the United States seems like a shit show on roller skates as far as the president and his policies that you have down there. The the extrajudicial assassination of Fishers. You and I have talked about this before on both coasts, mostly in the Caribbean, but also on the Pacific side. But Dan, you've represented some of the families of the Fishers killed in the Caribbean. And I heard there, I think it was a week ago or so, there was another attack. There's been a lull in that. What progress can you relate about your suits against America's, as I say, extrajudicial assassinations, executions of Fishers in the Caribbean?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, I believe it was last week that, you know, the U.S. had to admit that there's been absolutely no decline in drug trafficking as a result of the murder of all these boat people, right? Which is a pretty incredible thing. As you say, there was a bit of an ebb in the killings, they still continue. And also, quite troublingly, an investigator, a woman who was investigating the bombing of the boats, was murdered a week or so ago. And again, there's big question as to who did that. So it's a really troubling situation, and it has really eroded the rule of law in Latin America, and I think in the U.S. as well.
Well, in the U.S., we see still, although it's not as much focused on lately, the ICE agents marauding, the ICE prisons, the kidnapping of people and American citizens too, it turns out, off the streets. There's been a few people killed as well, and a lot of other incidents of gun waving goons caught on video, like trying to harass people. How does this roll into the America of the future, and this how does this tie into what's going on in South America?
Well, I think, you know, well, first of all, I think it's not a coincidence that the group being most targeted in the U.S. are Latinos, right? Many who have fled their countries south of the border because the U.S. has economically and politically destroyed those countries, right? And so they've fled the repression that the U.S. has brought upon them. And now they're being attacked here because they've decided to try to find safer ground, right? And as you know, I mean, the tactics that ICE is using against people look a lot like the tactics of the right-wing governments the U.S. has supported in Latin America, right? Mm-hmm. People are being disappeared. People are being tortured. People are being raped in detention. We know this. There's been some exposés on that. And so, you know, what the U.S. has brought upon the world is now coming home, right? They're starting, you know, these ICE forces are starting to look a lot like, you know, the right-wing death squads that the U.S. has supported.
Yeah, no coincidence, too. I saw you, and I can't recall now who you were speaking with, but in a recent interview, and you said the Republic is dead, and you said all indications of progress seem American progress politically, it seems to have disappeared. And you also more worryingly say that ICE will survive Trump, I guess, much like the Department of Homeland Defense survived Bush.
Yeah, well, I think most people believe, I mean, you know, it's very hard to create a democratic republic, and it's not so hard to destroy one, right? And no one expects that the republic is going to snap back in 2.5 years when Trump is gone. You know, so much damage has been done, so many institutions of democracy have been destroyed, and then other democracies of repression like ICE have been built up with, you know, ghastly amounts of resources and money. And you now have these detention centers that are being built you know, these essentially gulags throughout the country. Those aren't going away, in part because a lot of them are privatized. So, you know, people are making a lot of money on them. So, you know, once you create these arms of repression, they don't go away, you know, without a fight, without a big fight, maybe even, frankly, a revolutionary struggle.
Well, you say that the rich and the super rich have hijacked this country, this America. And you also say that nuclear conflict is on the table big time. I guess we'll finish on a happy note, Dan. What do you mean by the nuclear conflict being on the table big time?
Well, I mean, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, which you know, tracks this, says we're closer to a nuclear conflict than at any time in history. And you have people like Donald Trump who have openly said, you know, hey, why have nuclear weapons if you're not going to use them?
Indeed.
And you have Israel that has, you know, we don't know how many, but certainly a couple hundred nuclear warheads. Certainly they made it clear they're willing to use them if necessary. So, I mean, and then, of course, you have the conflict, you know, between Russia and Ukraine, where I also think nuclear weapons could be used. So I just think this is something that people are not worried about enough. Let's put it that way.
Well, Dan, we're fast out of time, but thanks a lot for coming on and scaring the hell out of everybody for the afternoon and wherever you're listening to this. I want to also thank Ricardo Vosch in Venezuela for coming on. That's all I've got for this week. Until the next time. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Chris.
This thing keeps on happening, which I struggle to comprehend. Our leaders saying things I couldn't possibly defend. I don't know how they think like that, the math does not equate. Unless that is, you think like one who runs an imperial state. I don't know how else to understand these invasions of these foreign lands. How it is that our oil is always underneath their soil. Around the world, the pattern is repeatedly borne out. If they have stuff the U.S. wants, that's all that it's about. If some American capitalist would benefit from it, then of human rights or whatever else, they don't give a shit. I don't know how else to understand these invasions of these foreign lands. To Iran, to South America, from Panama to Chile, Paraguay to Venezuela, the pattern is unmistakable, how so often it repeats. Whoever can tell whose oil might be beneath your feet. I don't know how else to understand these invasions of these foreign lands. How it is that our oil is always underneath their soil.
Good, bad, and ugly news on Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every week.